bit. Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
We've seen the Senate seats have been decided and the government,
yes,
and the opposition have, I believe, reached an agreement in principle as to how those, who will get a six-year term, who will get a three-year term. Our resident sophologist, Adam Carr, is on the line, and we want to talk about this. Adam,
good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Adam.
Now, this actually has to be decided by the Senate when it's sitting, but if I'm right, the government and the opposition have reached agreement as to how, which senators will get a six-year term and those that will get a three-year term, and they've chosen, I'll leave it to you to explain how, which method they've chosen to go with to decide this.
Right, yeah. The Constitution just says that the Senate will decide after a double dissolution who gets a six-year term and who gets a three-year term. So what's happened after every previous double dissolution is that they've decided that the first six senators elected in each state will get the six-year terms and the second six elected will get the three-year terms, which seems the most obvious way to do it. There have been suggestions that a fairer way to do it would be to recount the Senate votes as if it was a normal half-Senate election and the six senators from each state who would be elected, who would have been elected had it been a half-Senate election, get the long-term seats and the others get the short-term seats. What the Coalition and Labor have agreed, however, is to follow the method that's been followed in the past, which is to give the six-year seats to the first six elected in each state. In practice, it actually doesn't make a great deal of difference. There are only two Senate places would have been different had the other method been used.
And if I can say, you know, like if some people say, oh, look, we should use the count-back method, which is what is used in a normal, well, can be used in a normal Senate election, well, I could say in a normal Senate election, why don't you use the double dissolution method? I mean, both those elections are quite different. You know, the quota required.
Yeah, whichever they use, there will be winners and losers.
Yeah.
I think the reason this agreement suited both Labor and the Coalition is that they do best out of it, and
yeah,
the Greens don't do very well because six of their nine senators only get three-year terms.
Yeah, which
had
is
the other method been used, Senator Annan in New South Wales would have got a long-term seat. So it's made one big difference to the Greens.
Well, it's no loss to the Parliament if Lee's only there for 3 years rather than six.
Well, you may say that. I'm not going.
Well, no.
I'm not going there.
I think one of the interesting things about this is that, now, Darren Hinch, he's going to have a three-year term. He thinks he should have had a six-year term. He made some noise over the last couple of days. I'm going to challenge, I'm going to take him to court. Then he actually realised he didn't have any basis.
No,
take
the Senate. The Constitution gives the Senate absolute discretion on this. There's no basis for challenging it.
So, in terms of how this is going to work, those senators, and I see David Lionholm of the Liberal Democrats, he's got a three-year term.
Yep.
Bob Day, what about him?
Family First. He's got 3 years.
Good.
The three crossbenchers who get the long-term Senate seats are Pauline Hanson, Nick Xenophon, and Nick Xenophon's number two, Serling Griff. All the other crossbenchers will only get three-year terms, and some of them will then have to fight against each other at the next election to get one of the, because the quota, of course, at the next election will be twice as high as it was at this election. So in New South Wales, David Lionholm and the One Nation senator will have to fight it out for the crossbench seat.
And Jackie Lambie, is she a six-year or a three-year?
Yeah, she got a six-year term.
Yeah.
And she got a quota in her own right in Tasmania.
And this is where it's important, Tass and listeners, and is that getting a quota in your own right, not on preferences, getting a quota because X number of people in that state put you as number one, right? That's very important. Much as some of those senators we may not agree with on virtually anything, reality is they were elected, and particularly
sure, that's the result of our democracy.
But particularly if they've got a quota, right?
Yeah.
Now,
the difference between this election and the previous one is that everyone who got elected did so because voters chose to either vote for them with their number one or to give them one of their six preferences if they voted above the line.
Yeah.
So even the One Nation guy who only got 77 primary votes got elected because enough people gave him their preferences for him to get elected. Whereas previously we had senators elected more or less by accident because the parties automatically allocated people's preferences to them.
Yeah,
right.
Which I think was thoroughly undemocratic.
What would you say, Adam, you know, that the Senate, you still have preferential, you still have preferences. What would be the outcome had it had you could only vote for 12 candidates? That's it. Not party groups, you know. What would
be... If you abolished above-the-line voting and everyone had to fill in all the boxes, or up to 12 boxes...
Well, I mean, some people say, you know, OK, Bob Day or David Lionholm, you know, their level of support, OK, granted, they've been elected on because people have given them their preferences, but I have to say, you know, if you're voting... Let's say, you know, you're voting... For three Labor senators, three Liberal senators, you know, your second preference if you're a Labor voter isn't Liberal or Liberal if it's Labor. And, you know, I think preferences is the wrong word, or it's the term, but, you know, if you're voting in a particular direction, your preference isn't someone, perhaps if you're voting to the left of centre, it isn't someone like Bob Day, you know, etc. Which is, well, I think what the problem is that people are being elected, and you see this in lower house seats as well.
What's your view, Adam? What's your view about that?
I'm not quite sure what the question is.
Well, first past the post.
If you abolish preferences, I mean, we for the first 20 years of Federation, we didn't have preferential voting.
Yeah.
People simply voted. There were three senators to be elected at a House Senate election. You got three votes, and you just put three crosses in the boxes that you wanted. Well, the risk of that is that you get people elected on a minority vote if you've got more than two parties. I mean, that's what they do in Britain. You have simple first-past-the-post voting.
Yes.
But if there are five candidates in the seat and they get 20% of the vote each, someone will be elected with 20% of the vote against the wishes of 80% of the voters. There are pluses and minuses, whatever electoral system you adopt. I think preferential voting is fairer than first-past-the-post. It means people who don't support one of the two major parties can vote for the party of their choice, whether it's the Greens or One Nation or Xenophon or whatever, and then they can give their second preference to one of the two major parties, so they still get a say in who actually wins the election. I think that's a better system than first past the post.
We saw a higher up informal vote in the last election, and also participation. We're not at the the participation rate was not.
There was a slight drop in turnout, and there was a slight rise in the informal vote.
Yeah.
It's not as high as I expected because of the new Senate system. The new Senate system, in fact, did not confuse as many people as was feared. Most people knew to fill in 1 to 6 above the line or 1 to 12 below the line. The number of people who voted informal or who just voted one, which was the other suggestion that a lot of people would do, they would just put one in a box and do nothing else. In fact, not very many people did that. Most people followed the new system correctly.
So Adam, now that we have a new Senate, it's settled, what is your prediction about its behaviour? What do you think will occur?
Well, Malcolm Turnbull called the double dissolution because he wanted to clean out the crossbench and get a more manageable Senate for his government, and he hasn't succeeded in doing that.
In fact, he's created a more complicated Senate, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. The crossbench is now bigger than it was before. He's got four One Nation senators and three Nick Xenophon senators. To get a majority in the Senate, he either has to come to an agreement with Labor or an agreement with the Greens, or he has to negotiate with Hanson and Xenophon, which will be very tricky because they're both difficult characters and they don't agree with each other very often. So every piece of legislation will have to be negotiated with the crossbench. And I think they're going to find that very difficult in terms of, you know, tricky pieces of legislation like bringing back their industrial relations laws or their superannuation changes or the marriage equality plebiscite or all kinds of contentious issues that they're going to be trying to negotiate through the Senate.
Adam,
I think they're going to have a very difficult time.
It would be conceivable, though, that there will be certain issues that will be attractive to one of their groupings. So, you know, it may be that the industrial relations stuff is actually of interest to the Greens, and so they vote with government, or it might be that...
Possibly, yes.
So they can actually pick and choose, but it seems to me that they have got a larger block to deal with rather than the scenario that Julia Gillard had in the lower house, where she had to then literally cobble together, you know, a half a dozen different votes to be able to pass any legislation through. So in this...
The Gillard government actually had it quite easy compared to this.
Yeah.
To get things through the Senate, they only had to come to an agreement with the Greens, because Labor and the Greens had a majority between them. And in the lower house, she had the committed support of Tony Windsor and...
Yes,
and
she did, actually. She did, you're right.
And Andrew Wilkie for most of the time. So Turnbull has a majority of one in the lower house, which means he can't afford to have any defections or accidents in the lower house. And in the upper house, he's going to have to negotiate with this menagerie of minor parties and independents. And the other problem is that negotiating with One Nation will be a very bad look. I mean, there's been a general agreement in Australian politics ever since Pauline Hanson appeared that both parties try and avoid dealing with One Nation as much as possible. But there may be times when the government finds that doing a deal with One Nation is the only way they can get legislation through.
Yes, yes.
It's going to be a very interesting time. And I think, you know, some people say they're not sure that the government will go full term.
The problem they now have is they know that calling a double solution doesn't solve this problem.
Yeah.
It makes it worse. So that option is pretty much closed off. So the Turnbull government is going to have to live with this situation for at least the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Adam, thank you very much. As one of our listeners has just written into us and said, it's going to be a bumpy ride, but he is optimistic. Thank you very much for your time. It's always great to chat with you.
Anytime.
And we'll speak again soon, no doubt.
We will.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.